Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Nerd Party News, the show on the Nerd Party where we talk about the news. I'm Mike.
I'm Lance.
And today we're joined by a very special guest from Nerd Party's House Lights podcast, Brandon Shematala. How's it going, Brandon?
I'm doing really good, and I'm looking forward to talking about some stuff with you guys tonight, but just so you guys know, I've only got one rose for the two of you.
That means we're in trouble. One of us is, at least.
So speaking of which, I mean, well, Brandon, do you watch The Bachelor?
I absolutely do not.
Okay. But Lance does.
I know
you were saying this is like one of their weird weeks, right? This is one of their, like, we need to milk an extra episode out of this show.
Yes.
Weeks.
Yes, so it was.
So what happened this week?
This week was the Women Tell All episode. Mm-hmm. And so this is the episode where all the women who have been eliminated from the competition come and have like a sit down with the former host, Chris Harrison. I think I could say that now because he is the former host.
And I thought he said he was coming back next year.
I don't know about that. Let's
I
hold
mean,
off
he
on
say that.
I mean, yeah, he can say that all he wants, but I don't know if it's going to actually happen.
Yeah.
But this was already taped. It was taped in, you know, last month at some point. And like they even brought, you know, Matt out at the end, and he, you know, kind of addresses some things with some of the you know, the girls that kind of made it pretty far, but not all the way to the final four and the final three. We got to hear a little bit more from fan favorite Abigail and Katie. And then also the one that I think is at this point is probably the one that got away, which was Serena P, because those two had like a very tug on your heartstrings type of breakup at the in not last week, but the week before. And I think Matt really liked Serena and wanted her to kind of stick around, but she wasn't all in on him. And I think the two of them still kind of, you know, have a thing for each other. So hopefully, maybe like in real life, now that like things, especially now that things have kind of gone the way they've gone, they can kind of rekindle that. Cause I still think that there's probably some stuff there. But it is interesting to see the cast like catch up. And of course, like they showed, you know, some behind the scenes things and bloopers, and then some of the girls got to address some of the drama that was going on in the house, which was fun. We got to see Victoria again. She's just as ridiculous. So yeah, this is just kind of a time waster episode before we get to the last couple of weeks here, because this week is the fantasy suites where he gets to basically, you know, spend a night with each of them, the remaining three, and then after that, I think it's the 2-hour finale.
Wow, coming up on the end.
Yep.
Which were you more excited about, the finale for The Bachelor or the finale for WandaVision?
WandaVision. Well, it would have been The Bachelor, but because of all the real life stuff that has happened that has put a damper on the season of The Bachelor, it's cut down some of the anticipation for what it could be because of all the real world stuff. But the real world stuff is important, so it needed to be addressed.
Is this stuff that's gone on in the real world stuff that you've talked about in previous episodes? Because
I
don't know anything about this. Okay, so I'll have to listen back then. So,
yeah.
But I do have a question about this Bachelor thing, Lance, if I can. Mm-hmm. So are you like into the reality TV show game shows in general, or is it like just The Bachelor that's your thing?
No, I'm not really. And the Bachelor, the reason why I'm watching it this season is because, like, a long time ago, I was just like, I'm not ever watching The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. Like, I'm never going to watch it. And then I was like, you know what? I'll scratch that. The only way I will watch this is if they have a black man, like, as The Bachelor. I was like, and back then I was like, they'll never do that because America, and especially in America, but like people in general, would not want to see a black man doing the things that men do on this show. They don't want to see them, A, dating multiple women like at the same time, and B, like, you know, dating, you know, some white women. Like, people, like, people aren't ready for that. They don't handle that well, right? And so I was like, there's no way this is ever going to happen. And then it did. And I was like, well, I have to be a man of my word. I have to watch the show.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that makes sense then. Yeah. So I've never got into the reality TV show thing. I never watched an episode of Survivor ever.
You know, I haven't watched Survivor either.
Yeah, go back. So,
but I did watch, and to be fair, I did watch the Bachelorette seasons where they did have a black woman as the Bachelorette. I did watch those seasons.
Okay,
yeah. But those happened, like, you know, within the past 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw, you know, Paramount Plus, you know, just came into existence, which we'll talk about later on. You know, one of the things which is on there, one of the things that they dropped on opening day or whatever, was a Real World reunion where they bring back the original cast from the original season and put them in the same house and everything like that.
It's hilarious.
I haven't watched it yet, but I do have to say that I was kind of obsessed with the Real World back in the day. Although they don't have, like, the Chicago season from, like, 2003 or whatever, where it's like, what, come on, guys, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's a misstep. There.
Yeah, whatever.
These shows have been going on that long? Holy smokes.
Oh yeah, they've been going on since the early 90s. This is like the 30th anniversary reunion or something of this.
Yeah, the 90s, mid to late 90s is when all this stuff kind of started, like this whole like reality TV thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Real World was really pretty much the first, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's...
Wasn't it because of the original writer's strike that they had? Wasn't there a writer's strike in the 90s and that's what caused this?
That could be. I mean, it would have lined up. Right around season two of Next Gen, which is how I remember when writer strikes occurred. You know,
yeah. I remember the one in 08 because I was so upset that Terminator got, like, you know, reduced its first season because of that writer strike.
Yeah.
That was a weird one. Like, they were shooting Star Trek 09 during the writer strike, and like they talked about, like, you know, JJ, he's like, I'm a member of the Writers Guild. You know, but I'm directing this movie and the script is locked and there would be times where I'll be on the set and think like, oh, you know what we should do is this and we can't change it because that would be a writing change and I'm on strike as a writer. Mm-hmm. It's very strange. But anyway, all right. So, you know, speaking of reality TV, WandaVision ended and the reason why Brandon is here today. I mean, Brandon can stop by whenever he wants, but the reason why he's here today, the reason why we requested his presence is because he has been watching WandaVision basically without having seen anything else in the MCU aside from Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm, yes. I saw Doctor Strange under protest. My wife wanted me to go because she really likes Benedict Cumberbatch. And so we went to go see that movie, and she's like, you're going to love this movie. And I walked out of that movie, I'm like, I did not love that movie. So,
well, because your opinion is so unique, I think that we should get to you. We should hold off on that, right? Let's get the baseline opinion first, right? Mm-hmm. From someone who has seen the entirety of the MCU, you know. So let's start with you, Lance. Mm-hmm. What did you think about this finale? Oh, and spoilers for WandaVision, because obviously that's what we're talking about right now.
I liked the finale. I thought it was fine. Was it the strongest of the episodes that they've had? Was it the strongest of the nine? No. But I thought that they accomplished what they probably wanted to accomplish as far as what they wanted the characters to do and go through this season, and also based on what has been previously established within the MCU, I thought that they accomplished that through this series and through this show. So, I thought it was good.
Mm-hmm. I also thought it was good. I think, you know, and this is something that we can talk about later on, but the idea of expectations, you know, sort of playing into a factor in terms of like people's enjoyment of this. You know, there's obviously lots of speculation and it didn't have any of those things. But if you were just to watch it as like a normal piece of television and not buy into this hype of like, And then are they, you know, is Jesus going to come down from heaven and like literal Jesus and just like, you know, I mean, because really that would have been the only thing that could have sort of lived up to the,
you know, that would have been, that would have been the cameo that would have blown people's minds for sure.
I would have given it 5 stars, no doubt. But, you know, that being said, just watching it as, you know, the final chapter in this saga, I thought that it was very satisfying. And I also think that they set up some interesting stuff. I agree that it's not the strongest episode of the 9, but I mean, last week's was good. I'm trying to think of, I mean, I think maybe the, I don't know, maybe the Family Ties episode. I don't know. Well, one of those in there, I think. Actually, it was probably the one, After These Messages or whatever it was called, where they show what's going on the outside and they introduce.
That was a really good one, too.
Yeah. I don't know. They were all really good. Mm-hmm. But at least I thought so. But Brandon, as someone who hasn't seen anything, what did you think?
Well, first off, I mean, I was really intrigued by the title of it when I heard about it at first. I'm like, oh, this sounds really interesting. And then I saw the trailer and I was really disappointed that there was no Wanda Sykes in this show. Okay, because like I think she's hilarious. Okay, so I was a little disappointed with that, but I was captivated by the trailer like right away. I thought the trailer did a really good job of showing what this show is going to be. And the reason I was drawn to this show was, I mean, like, Mike, you know me, I'm a film and TV buff, and I watch from all decades and all genres and all years. And I mean, while sitcoms are definitely the television genre that I watch the least, aside from The Bachelor, I was very intrigued to see them bring this show with black and white photography, 4:3 aspect ratios. So I was really intrigued to see what they were going to do by honoring the legacy of television. And so that's what actually captured me. And I wanted to watch it with my kids. So I started watching with my daughter, Aubrey, and she really enjoyed it. Even though she doesn't know these shows, right from the get-go, she really was enjoying the show as well. And after we got to about, you know, 5 or 6 episodes in, my daughter, my older daughter, actually finally convinced my two younger daughters, my twins, to watch with her. So they plowed through the first 6 episodes one night and they kind of fell in love with the show. And so we, as together as a family, watched the last 3 episodes every week, and they all really, really love the show. And I thought it was really fun to watch a superhero, and as a man with 3 daughters, to where the main character is a woman, you know, a powerful woman, a strong woman, a really interesting character, you know. But not only that, how they developed the show, like a family woman, right? She's got kids, she's got a husband, you know. So all these things were really intriguing to me as the show went on. And so while I didn't really know all these external aspects, and I realized that there would be a part of the show that I wouldn't understand, Mike, you actually helped me out quite a bit by behind the scenes. You would watch the episode first and say, okay, Brandon, you should do this, or here's a bit of backstory here that you should know. And that actually helped me, and I would pass that information on to my other kids as well. And it gave me enough that I was able to appreciate a bit more some of the stuff that I wasn't aware of because I haven't seen these films. But I was more interested in what was going on in the town rather than the stuff that was going on outside. So the, you know, like the military aspect that was going on outside of the TV bubble didn't really interest me as much. I liked the character of Rambo quite a bit. So I liked when she came back into the town. But when we got to the end, and I mean, when we got to the end with this villain who came in, Agatha, I didn't know who this was, but I found out that she's not appeared in the series yet. I thought that was an interesting take because it brought in this kind of backstory that we didn't know. We got to see Wanda's history and why these sitcom TVs meant so much to her, which I thought was really touching, and I thought was a really, really beautiful episode getting Wanda's past. But then at the end, having Vision versus Vision, to me, that was very much a comic book trope, and it perfectly fit within a comic book style movie. Because how often do you get a superhero and kind of an alternate superhero? I think that happens quite often, you know? So I don't know. I loved it overall. I thought it was really fantastic. I'm really glad I watched it. I've only seen every episode once so far. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed the show, and I'm really glad I watched it.
Well, you were talking about how, you know, the ending with Vision versus Vision was kind of, you know, comic book trope and everything. And I think most people would agree with you on that. You know, that last episode pretty much becomes like your standard Marvel movie. And mm-hmm. there were a number of people who were critical of it for that. You know, the fact that the rest of the show did such a good job of, you know, creating a unique identity, you know, from the other parts of the MCU. And then, you know, the big finale basically just ends in a giant fight like all the rest of them do. Yeah. So I guess my question for you is, as someone who is put off by these movies in general, because that's what they are, I mean, did you enjoy that finale? Or, you know, is it something where now that you saw it, you'd be like, I could check out some of these other movies? Or are you just like, ah, that was kind of boring?
I didn't think it was boring, but it also, I don't think I'm going to revisit the films. Like, I don't, or visit the films for a first time. This hasn't intrigued me enough to explore the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I might. I mean, my kids are starting to watch them, so we might have a movie night, and we might pop on something. Already, the next day, they were watching the Avengers movie upstairs, right? Because it intrigued them enough to start wanting to watch more of them, which is fine. So I'm sure at some point I'm going to see a few more of these things. But I mean, I kind of also expected that because I knew watching this film that there was something going on. There was more to this. So when the show started, what I was expecting it to be was, without knowing what else was going on, I expected somebody was keeping Wanda captive, is what my initial impression was. They're keeping her captive, they're keeping her under control, and they're trying to keep her from knowing what's going on outside of this bubble because of X factor in whatever Marvel movie. That's what I assumed was going on. It didn't turn out to be that way, which is fine. But I also expected at some point that this veil would be lifted and it would tie into the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe because this is a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? So this was not a surprising ending to me at all to have it tie into the greater story and to be told in the format of the greater story.
Yeah. Say, no, I agree with you on that. And I think, like, you know, some people who would push back on the ending, how they're just like, well, it's just, you know, a fight, and we've seen that already. It was like, well, I mean, they had to. I mean, this is still the MCU. They still put their, you know, one of their hallmarks into it, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, I think that's a fair assumption to make that they were going to at least include something of that nature, right, in these things. Right. And I think you would be kidding yourself to think that they would not put it in there. It's like, again, like, you got to know who you're dealing with and what is expected of you when you're dealing with, like, when you're dealing with those same, with whatever entity that you're working with. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, it didn't put a damper on anything for me because, like, if you're watching this, you know what territory comes with them, right? So, like, mm-hmm. we're going to have this fight, but it didn't define the series, right? That'd be one thing. If the series was defined by the fact that, like, it was like, oh, we're going to have, you know, this, you know, mass CGI fight, then that'd be one thing. But it didn't. It was just a small part of the larger whole, which told a completely new type of story in a very different way from a lot of the other things that they did. It showed, and this show allowed Marvel to kind of stretch itself and flex a little bit and show that it can do things that people probably thought that it couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And for some people, it proved what they've been doing all along in a lot of ways.
I think that this is a very brave show to launch your television version of the Marvel Universe, mm-hmm. because it's so different. You know, to launch where you got these first four or five episodes that are completely contained within this artificial reality that's so different from the rest of your Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think that's a super brave decision, and I applaud them for it.
Yeah, it worked. It worked. It, you know, again, it worked out. Like, it's like, good on them. They know what buttons to press.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I mean, saying that, that's interesting. And, like, thinking about how next week, well, not next week, but the week after, a week from Friday, is when they start up their next show, The Falcon and Winter Soldier, which, you know, looking at the trailers, is very much, it seems way more in keeping with the movies, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of your more standard version of that. I wonder I mean, you know, good on them and everything, but I wonder why, just in the interest of safety, they didn't decide to start with that one and then go to WandaVision.
I don't know, but I think the fact that this one was so out there and so different, I think would probably get people to maybe, you know, crave the MCU of old, perhaps, mm-hmm. or maybe they need something grounded after having something so fantastical, which is mm-hmm. why you have, you know, this, you know, government espionage type of thing with the Winter Soldier and Falcon, right? It's a little bit more grounded than, you know, a witch creating an alternate reality television show throughout the years, right? And so, yeah. And then after their show is when, like, you are going back to the fantastical, right, with Loki. So I think it's a balance thing for them, right? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, putting mm-hmm. WandaVision and Loki back-to-back might be just a little too much.
Yeah, it might be too much.
Yeah.
See, I watched the trailer for that next show, and that's kind of why I think I'm probably not going to continue, because I watched this and I'm just like, this just looks like a regular superhero thing, which doesn't really intrigue me. Like, I like, you know, I love Sam Raimi's Spider-Man trilogy. Mm-hmm. I love Christopher Nolan's Batman stuff, and I really love the Tim Burton era of the Batman movies. But that's really about all I watched for super movies. Lance, we had you on Franchise 50 to talk about Blade, which is in Marvel, and I'm like, I wasn't really into that either. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know why comic books don't really do it for me. You know, I didn't really like Watchmen. I'm not even sure what it is, because the Batman comic books, like, they were releasing the Batman comic books in like a trade paperback format going all the way back to the beginning. And I like bought a whole ton of those. There was a bunch of black and white versions mm-hmm. from the 60s and I was reading those, but I don't know, just comic books in general, I just never really got into. I never really read them as a kid. I had a few Spider-Man issues here and there, but I was never a collector of comic books. The comic books that I had, there was a company called Techno Comics. And they had, like, Leonard Nimoy's Primortals, they had, like, Neil Gaiman's Mr. Hero, like, all these science fiction writers. Like, that was the comic books that I read.
Cool.
Well, I mean, you mentioned that you were a fan of Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, and you, I know you said that you didn't like Doctor Strange, but, you know, since it's been stated that Doctor Strange 2 is going to be the direct follow-up to WandaVision, and that Sam Raimi is directing Doctor Strange 2. Are you going to go see Doctor Strange 2? Benedict Cumberbatch?
my wife will drag me to it, and then I'll see it.
There it is.
Yeah. But would you go even if she wouldn't drag you?
Probably not.
No?
No. Okay. Oh, wow. Yeah, probably not. So I enjoyed this for what it was. I think you guys told me that this is a one and done.
Yes, they were saying that, I guess I just heard this the other day, that Kevin Feige was saying, like, you know, they were at the TCAs, you know, the, mm-hmm. where they tell all the television critics, like, what their new shows are and everything. And they're like, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier, like, we know what season two will be, you know, and Loki, like, we have an idea for season two. But as of right now, we don't have any plans for WandaVision. We don't know what a season two would look like, because essentially Doctor Strange 2 is going to be season two of WandaVision, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, what happens on the other side of that, they don't know. So they're not saying that it's definitely not going to happen, but right now they don't have any plans.
Mm-hmm.
So
cool.
Yeah. So, okay. Lance, mm-hmm. if you were to recommend an MCU movie for Brandon to watch, what would it be?
Just one.
Just, like, you know, we've got one chance to keep him hooked, you know? What would it be?
Black Panther.
Okay. Why is that?
Well, it has, I think, knowing Brandon a little bit, I think it has things in there that I think he would appreciate, you know, filmmaking-wise, story-wise. And then also it has just enough of the MCU flair to let you know that it's the MCU. But I think Black Panther is unique enough and special enough that it would be something that would be intriguing to him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. certainly, I think, the most critically acclaimed of the Marvel movies.
There's that, too.
Yeah. For me, I think I would say Guardians of the Galaxy, because it is most unlike the other Marvel movies in a lot of ways. You know, I mean, certainly it has that flavor and everything, but it's like in a completely different part of the galaxy, or maybe it's even a different galaxy. I think it has connections to the larger universe, but they're tangential at best. You know, you don't need to know anything about it going into it. And in a lot of ways, it's more sci-fi than superhero.
Okay.
And it has a very unique sense of humor. And I don't know. It feels more like Star Wars than like a Marvel movie in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that, Brandon, I think you'd actually enjoy that one quite a bit.
That's the one with the guy from Jurassic Park, eh?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And sure. And it's also got a talking raccoon in it.
And right. A tree.
So, okay, so let me ask you this one here. So, like, my impression of the Iron Man film is that it's not really one of the ones that's, like, focused for kids. Is that correct?
The first Iron Man?
The first Iron Man.
None of them, like, there's no, like, extreme in the Marvel universe. No. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing which is going to be worse than Discovery. But, it may be like at that point in time, you know, I mean, it is crazy. Like when like Endgame came out, I'm like, let's go back to the very beginning, you know?
Yeah. And Iron Man is completely different from what Endgame is.
Yeah. Okay.
You can see the evolution and in a lot of ways it feels more like a movie than any of the others, because it has that grounded, whatever they shot it on film. It's not because at the time it was just a movie. Mm-hmm. You know, just like any other movie. So, I mean, that's another one, which, I mean, for one thing, I think it's one of the absolute best, but also...
It is good.
It's not... It's before it became this, like, homogenized product. You know what I mean? it does have its own feel and everything. And, it's a solid, movie. I mean, you said you like the Raimi Spider-Mans and the Batman and everything. It's kind of more like that than it is like, you know, Doctor Strange or whatever, you know? So, yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, you know what, Lance? I'm going to make you a promise.
Okay.
I'm going to watch Black Panther.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Nice.
So, and then I might do the Guardians of the Galaxy, but Black Panther is one that did intrigue me here, and I have heard a lot of good things about that one. So, you know what? I'll make you a promise, Lance. We'll get to Black Panther.
Okay.
All right. Well, cool. When you do, let us know. You can come back on and give us your review.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you'll do the same thing for Guardians, and then you'll do the same thing for Iron Man, and then pretty soon, Brandon's going to be on weekly talking about the MCU as he goes through the MCU.
I'll see you for the next 20 weeks, guys.
that's cool. Hey, I'm all for it. So, you know, Brandon, you said Sam Raimi Spider-Man. That's one of your favorites. That's one of your go-tos. So, you know, there's been some questions about what's going on with the new Spider-Man movie, the third incarnation of Spider-Man and the third movie in this current trilogy, Spider-Man No Way Home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Doctor Strange, the title, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, there's been some rumors, pretty substantiated rumors, that Spider-Man as well will focus on this multiverse, and that Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, the previous two Spider-Mans, are going to appear in this new movie. And that seems to have been confirmed by the official Twitter account. They're getting really cute with the marketing of this movie. And Twitter said, writing bios today, who wants one? And Spider-Man No Way Home said, what you got for me? And Twitter said, Spider-Man No Way Home, starring Tom Holland, Zendaya, Jacob Batalon, Tobey Maguire, and Andrew Garfield, only in movie theaters this Christmas. I mean, maybe they were just being a little forward, but I got to think that this was planned because they do this planned stuff all the frickin' time with Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows that it's going to happen. It just seems like this is official confirmation.
Cool.
So that's cool. So, Brandon, let me ask you again.
Would I see the Spider-Man movie if Tobey Maguire was in it?
Yes.
I don't know. We'll have to see how the rest of this goes. So, how the rest of these Marvel ones go. Probably not, but I'm not going to say an outright no. So, okay. Didn't they do something like that with the animated? Like, wasn't the animated Spider-Man that just came out about a whole bunch of multiverse Spider-Mans?
I'm glad you brought this up, Brandon. I'm glad you brought that up. Because the one Spider-Man, if they're doing the multiverse and they're doing it in live action, they're doing it off the success of the Miles Morales Spider-Man, the Black Spider-Man, and he is, for some odd reason, not included in the live casting, in the live action casting for this new Spider-Man. And I think that that is a huge omission. And of course, you know, the response I typically get for this is like, oh, well, we don't know who's going to show up. It was like, well, like it shouldn't be like a oh, let's wait and see if he shows up. It'd be a great surprise. It's like, no, that should be it should be announced along with the casting of Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield is whoever they chose to be Miles Morales. If you're going to do a live action multiverse with the Spider-Man, then Miles Morales needs to be in there, and so does Miguel, right? For Spider-Man 2099, that could be the surprise. But like, don't like exclude the person of color Spider-Man. Like, do not exclude him from the live action, because as of right now, will I see this Spider-Man 3? Yes. Will I hate on it immediately if I don't see Miles Morales in there? Absolutely, because I have problems with the MCU Spider-Man universe, and you know, I would like for it to, like, you know, trend in the right direction, but at the same time, I also kind of hope that it doesn't, so I can continue hating on it, because I disagree with a lot of the decisions they make in this universe.
I would agree with what you've just said, Lance. Like, I haven't seen that animated Spider-Man, but I've heard nothing but good about it. Right? I've heard nothing but good. I've heard it's been the best Spider-Man movie in, like,
arguably.
Yeah. So
it's. I mean, let's not. You know, it's the best Marvel movie ever. I mean, there's really nothing that comes close. I'm sorry. Nothing that comes close.
Arguably.
I would say not arguably. I would say that is a straight up fact. Yes. And also, I mean, yeah, you want to watch something that the kids would love and everything.
They would love that.
But okay, it is super badass. Can we say badass? I'm saying it. It's badass. Yeah,
it's badass. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's badass. It's amazing. I think it's on Netflix.
Check it out.
Okay.
It's on Disney Plus.
So yeah, the fact that they're not,
because it's Sony, it's not. Yeah.
But the fact that they're not capitalizing on the success of Miles speaks volumes for a lot of different things. I'll say that.
Yeah. All right. Well, Spider-Man: No Way Home only in theaters this Christmas, so that's exciting. So moving on to the other side of town. Is it across the street? Is that what they say? I'll get this straight one day. Moving across the street to DC, Superman and Lois. Now, Lance, you told us about this last week and how it's great and everything.
It is.
Yeah. Good news and bad news.
Yeah.
Good news, it's been renewed for season 2.
Heyo.
Bad news, they're stopping it after episode 5 because they need to, I think, shoot more episodes because of the pandemic. Yeah. So there will be a gap after season 5. They're going to premiere Supergirl, the final season, and then Supergirl will go away for a little while, and it sounds like over the summer is when it'll Superman and Lois will come back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we're getting season 2.
Yeah, so it's good for me. The show so far is 2 for 2. I think that it's on the right track. I'm really loving the show. So kudos to them for already getting renewed. And it's smart of them to, in the same time slot, to put the Supergirl episodes there. Especially, and you know, and I guess this might work, you know, just narratively, because, like, I mean, Supergirl's ending anyway, right? And so when it ends and when Superman and Lois comes back, it's just like, well, we just move straight ahead with that. So, yeah.
So, Brandon, have you watched any of the Arrowverse TV shows?
I have not watched any of the Arrowverse anything, so I'm not... I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm not really into superhero stuff, but yeah. I'm grateful that a Canadian invention like Superman has reached such critical acclaim in the United States.
And they shoot all these in Canada, too, sure which do. Is great. But yeah, I can say with a fair amount of certainty that you would hate all of these shows.
You know what? He might hate all those shows, but Brandon, you could if you do decide to watch any of the Arrowverse shows, you got to start with Arrow, and then you know what? Good for you. Like that, there's a podcast that you could listen to along with it.
No way, no way. What is it called?
Always Hold On to Arrow.
Oh man, I got to check that out. You know,
you should.
I mean, I'm so busy with my podcasting network, the United Federation of Podcasts. Oh wait, you're on there.
What do you know?
Well, I'm guessing that Brandon's not going to be too upset over the fact that San Diego Comic-Con has been canceled for this summer. They're going to do a 3-day online event, but then in November, they are going to be doing a small 3-day in-person event in San Diego. I guess this isn't super surprising, but at the same time, I mean, with, you know, vaccine rollout starting and everything like that, it is kind of disappointing. But I guess just something of this scale, it would be hard to say, like, yes, we can do this in July.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. I think they made the right move.
I'm eager to get back to conventions, but I mean, like, safety is important. I might make the trip down to San Diego just on one condition. Let me ask you, is San Diego in Texas?
No.
No? Okay, then I might consider it, yeah.
Yeah, I've been to San Diego, not during the convention. I know, Lance, you said that you were at the convention, mm-hmm. but I went there for the very first World Baseball Classic. And it's right across the street from the convention. I remember
it is.
And I remember seeing that convention center and thinking, like, can you just imagine that place just filled with comics? That sounds amazing.
It's definitely experience. I was there in 2011. Zach and I went, and that was like, I'm glad we went then, because like there's no way we could probably go now, because it's so crazy, and it's almost too big for its own good at this point. And I think we were there, like when we were there, like we were able to do the stuff that we wanted, but it was still, you know, it's pretty taxing. Like you're like to get into panels, it's kind of difficult. You gotta like, you know, you gotta plan it out as much as you can. It's not like it made me appreciate the smaller cons that I go to, because you know, you're a lot freer. You can get more accomplished in your day. But it was definitely worth it to experience it at least once.
Yeah, you should come up to Chicago for C2E2 point.
It's on my list, because like there's, you know, there's several of these other cons that I'd like to go to. I haven't been to New York Comic Con, and I haven't been to C2E2 or WonderCon yet. But those are three that are on my list of ones that I need to definitely do.
Yeah, WonderCon is being canceled this year as well, by the way, but that was kind of obvious. Yeah. Well, you know, the pandemic, as per usual, is causing havoc on the movie release calendar as well. But now, in addition to some things moving back, there's other things moving up, which is kind of cool. The first thing that happened, which kind of was the catalyst for most of these other changes, was F9... the Fast and Furious movie was moved back a month from May 28th to June 25th, which, while that's disappointing, I also see that as being rather promising, the idea that they didn't just push it back indefinitely or whatever, mm-hmm. because the two big ones that everyone was looking at were Black Widow and F9.
Yes.
And for them to say, like, we just need one more month, I mean, that's pretty confident. And I'm excited to finally get to see this thing. And because of that, with May 28th now available, Paramount moved A Quiet Place up from September 17th to May 28th.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Now, I think it's pretty obvious that the reason why they did that, some people might be like, what? You got your nice cozy September date? Why would you jeopardize that by moving it up to May 28th? I mean, I think the reason is fairly obvious. It's because on Monday or whatever it was, Paramount Plus launched, and they're like, Paramount Plus! And the world was like, how is this different?
Yes.
It has a shiny logo. Admittedly, the best logo of the streaming services. But aside from that, it's like, you want us to watch the real world, but with a bunch of people in their 50s? No, that's not going to cut it. And one of the things that they announced in their investor day was that Quiet Place would be coming to Paramount Plus 45 days after its theatrical release. Mm-hmm. So that means, okay, we'll dump Quiet Place into theaters on Memorial Day weekend, May 28th, and then by mid-July, you want to watch Quiet Place at home? Sign up for Paramount Plus. You know,
there you go.
It just makes sense, but it benefits everybody.
That's what they're doing.
They do all need content, but I think that that's kind of a win-win for everybody. Because of that, you know, Infinite, which was the new Antoine Fuqua movie starring Mark Wahlberg, that was on the schedule for May 28th, but I think everyone was kind of like, that's going to, you know, there's no way that they're going to release that, go head-to-head with F9. That was going to move. And now that, you know, things have kind of worked their way out, Infinite is coming out September 24th, a week after when Quiet Place was. So that'll be cool. I'm really looking forward to Infinite. I don't know anything about it, but it was described as, not in terms of, like, content, but in terms of, like, what it is, like, the next Matrix, you know? Like the tiny little sci-fi movie, which, you know, nobody is expecting anything out of, which ends up being like a game changer. And with Antoine Fuqua as the director, I can totally see that because that guy is amazing. Okay. So also, Peter Rabbit has moved up from June 11th to May 14th, which is kind of cool. And Minions, The Rise of Gru, has moved back a full year from July 2nd, 2021 to July 1st, 2022. That's kind of a bummer.
It is. I did see a funny tweet about that. It was like, somebody was just like, by the time the next Minions comes out, they're going to be running the joint or something like that. Something to that effect. Yeah, it made me laugh.
And the other one, which is definitely disappointing, is Fatherhood, which is the new Kevin Hart movie from the director of American Pie. That was supposed to come out April 16th, and it's been moved to Netflix. It's going to be released under the Obama's label on June 18th for Father's Day, which I guess makes sense or whatever, but still, would have been cool to have that in theaters.
Mm-hmm. What's the Obama's label?
Yeah, they've got like an exclusive deal with Netflix for producing content. So they do like a lot of like documentaries and stuff like that. So they're going to be releasing this as part of that.
Okay. You know.
Also, another movie which, you know, was moved out of theaters and onto streaming services without remorse, which we talked about a few weeks ago, based on the Tom Clancy book, kind of like a prequel to The Hunt for Red October and Clear and Present Danger and all those things in the same universe as Jack Ryan, at least the books are, but with a different character, played by Michael B. Jordan in this case. They dropped a trailer for it, finally. The movie comes out April 30th. So, Brandon, what did you think about the trailer?
I think this looks really good. I really like the Jack Ryan series of movies. You know, I've tried to read Tom Clancy, and I don't really like his style of writing, but I really enjoy the stuff that's been adapted from his works. I haven't seen the Ben Affleck one, and then was Chris Pine in one? Or was that a... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen those two, but I really love the Jack Ryan show. Both seasons of that were really good, so I'm really looking forward to this. So I didn't realize that this was something that was originally on schedule for theaters, and when I started watching the trailer, I'm like, oh, is this like a new TV show or something. And then as the trailer went on, it said that it was going to be a movie that's coming out. So I knew right away because, again, I'd fallen in love with Tom Clancy's novels, movies. I had bought a whole bunch of his novels when I was a kid, wanting to read them and intending to read them. And then I started reading Hunt for October, and I'm like, man, this book is just brutal. And so I just sold all the books that I had, but I knew that Without Remorse was one of his books, so I knew right away what it was. But yeah, this looks really good. I'm stoked for this.
Yeah, this one, it's a prequel to those, in that, like, the character of, well, in the books it's called Clark, who's in Clear and Present Danger. This is like his origin story. Mm-hmm. So he was the Willem Dafoe character in Clear and Present Danger. He also shows up in Some of All Fears, played by Liev Schreiber. And okay, apparently this movie's been in development forever. I mean, like, I remember, like, back in the 90s, them talking about making this movie. You know, mm-hmm. I think probably with Willem Dafoe at the time. But, like, it almost happened, like, I don't know, maybe like 10 years ago with Tom Hardy. But it fell through, and now they finally...
You mean with Bane?
yes, which I would have been fine with that, but, you know, Michael B. Jordan is a pretty good choice as well.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I mean, Some of All Fears, I would recommend watching that one. I would recommend watching both of them. Some of All Fears is certainly not as good as the original trilogy, but it's pretty solid. It's interesting in that all of these are like origin stories with the same basic, like, mm-hmm. character arc. Even the show has that, but, like, he's not going on a submarine every time. It's like, right, the story is unique each time. Yeah. And they're all pretty solid.
Well, yeah. I'll get to it. I texted you an image of I had bought the box set on HD DVD.
Yeah.
And I just still haven't gotten around to watching the Sum of All Fears. So, and I don't know why. I've just never seen it. So
do it. It's good. It's good.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So what did you think about the trailer, Lance?
I'm here for it. It looks exciting. I'm a Michael B. Jordan fan, have been so ever since Friday Night Lights seasons 4 and 5.
Yeah. So, and The Wire too.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. But that was the first, but I watched The Wire after, after I watched Friday Night Lights. So, that's my origin story with Michael B. Jordan. So I'm a huge fan of him. So I'm excited for this. Definitely will be seeing this.
Yeah, me too. You know, I've been looking forward to this movie forever, and, you know, just the fact that even once it got made, that was then delayed for like a year, you know, that was pretty disappointing. So, you know, I wish I could see it in theaters, but I will gladly watch it at home if that's all I can do. So, yeah. And I'm trying to get through. We just started season 2 of Jack Ryan last night. I'm trying to get through that first, just in case they make a little surprise. John Krasinski shows up or something. I don't think that's going to happen, but you never know.
Hey, man, everybody is wanting that dude to show up in something. People in the WandaVision were wanting him to show up.
Yeah.
And people are going to want him to show up in this.
Is he in the MCU?
People have been wanting him to be Mr. Fantastic of the Fantastic Four for years. So, and so among the fan theories that did not come true for WandaVision, he did not show up in that.
You know, the only things I've seen this guy in is the Jack Ryan show and A Quiet Place. Like, I haven't seen The Office, right? So I don't know him from anything besides serious roles.
Oh, really?
You got to watch the Michael Bay masterpiece, 13 Hours.
Oh, okay.
13 Hours. Forgot about that one.
Yeah. I can't believe I haven't watched The Office because I work in an office, right? I work in an office setting, so
yeah.
I'm sure it would resonate.
Yeah. Well, I know you said that you had trouble reading Tom Clancy books, but it sounds like you don't have that issue with Stephen King, right?
I love Stephen King.
Yeah. And when the news of this show, The Talisman, dropped, you expressed excitement.
I am super excited that this show is getting developed because this gives me great hope for some of his other works to be finally properly adapted, such as the Dark Tower series. Like, Stephen King has written so many novels that he's, like, collapsed in on himself, and all of his novels now, like, tie into each other. Like, there's references to all of his books and other works, but really where this began was in the Dark Tower series. And there's elements that are in these books, and you know, The Talisman is this big fantasy epic that he wrote with Peter Straub. And I'm not familiar with Peter Straub's work, but it's a really good book about this young kid going into, like, this parallel dimension. And I'm really excited to see this, because they've done some really great jobs with Stephen King adaptations. Like, The Outsider came out on HBO just a short while ago, and that was really well done. 11/22/63 was an amazing miniseries. Like, the book for that one's really good as well. And I think Stephen King really thrives when they just kind of focus on adapting the work. You know, like, Under the Dome was an amazing novel, and they turned it into a really good first season with two really terrible seasons after it. And it's really unfortunate that they tried to expand it, because when they come out, they're so popular and they're like, well, we should probably do more of this. People seem to like this. And they just need to stop with the source material and just end it and don't keep going on with it. But I'm hoping that with the people that are involved, like the Duffer brothers, I'm loving Stranger Things. So I think they've done a really good job there. Having Steven Spielberg produce this will lead to them doing a proper adaptation of The Dark Tower. So, I don't know. That's my hopes.
Yeah, the backstory on this is that Spielberg read the book 2 years before it was published and bought the rights outright in perpetuity, which means, like, he just had it forever. Mm-hmm. And for the past 35 years, he's been trying to make it into a movie and failing. I guess they came really close a couple years back with a director who had worked on The Handmaid's Tale. But now, yeah, it's going to be a series on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And the Duffer brothers, they're producing it, but it sounds like they're taking a George Lucas approach to this, where they're like, yeah, that's good. You go do that. The showrunner is Curtis Gwynn, who worked on Stranger Things as well as a bunch of other shows like The Walking Dead, The Leftovers, things like that. So it certainly sounds promising, and it sounds like maybe they finally cracked the code, you know, having Spielberg involved, you know, he can't miss and everything like that. I'm sure that Netflix wants all of this. Stephen King, Duffer Brothers, and Steven Spielberg all together. Mm-hmm. Come on. Lance, have you read the book? Are you familiar with any of it or not? Yeah. Well, it's not the only show which is being developed for a streamer these days, and this one is one which I'm super excited about. The End Is Nigh, which is a new Bill Nye show, which is basically looking at, like, world-ending threats, I guess. They say everything from viruses to volcanoes, asteroids to authoritarianism, climate change to chemical warfare. And it's going to be, you know, like a Bill Nye show, where it's going to be kind of like an educational, informational thing. But here's the thing. It's being produced by Seth MacFarlane and Brandon Braga. Brandon Braga is going to be the showrunner, and he's going to direct all the episodes himself. Did you guys watch Cosmos?
I did not.
Yeah. The pilot for that was directed by Braga. It was the first thing he had ever directed. And it is, I don't want to overstate this, but it is visionary, you know? It's one of those things where I'm like, this guy has written hundreds of television episodes and everything like that. He's never directed anything. And he is directing something which is so visually striking and which does things which I've never seen before on film, and is telling this story completely through pictures, you know? It's like, why hasn't he been directing for all these years? You know, what's going on? And, you know, like, he did that Books of Blood movie thing last year. That wasn't super great or anything like that. But this is seems like it's right in his wheelhouse. You know, obviously he's a science fiction writer, but he's always been very into, you know, science fact as well. And I don't know, this sounds like a slam dunk to me, but yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, with McFarlane involved, is there any chance that we can have Bill Nye talking to either Peter Griffin or Brian Griffin? Because that'd be hilarious.
I'm guessing since it's on Peacock, the answer is probably no, because Disney would be like, this isn't happening. But you never know. It could.
I mean, just like, you know, having Bill Nye, like, educate the two of them on something, like, or educate, like, Peter on something, or, uh-huh, like, or have a discussion with Brian about something. That'd be hilarious.
That'd be good. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, something else to look forward to. And speaking of things to look forward to and people who have written for Star Trek before, we have a writer for the new Star Trek movie. I know this has happened, like, let's see, one, two, three. Well, this would be the fourth time that this has happened.
Just but four? Are you sure about that? You sure it's not like 10?
I'm pretty sure it's four. First time, it was Payne and McKay, and that movie fell through because they didn't want to pay the Chris's what they had signed up for. And then you had the Tarantino movie with Mark L. Smith writing it, which they didn't do because Tarantino decided he wanted to do something else for his last movie. And then they had the Noah Hawley script, which they came really, really close to making but pulled the plug on because they changed regimes at Paramount. And now we have Kalinda Vasquez, who is a Star Trek Discovery writer. She wrote the Short Treks episode Ask Not, which admittedly I thought was kind of dumb, but everybody else seems to like it. It was the one with where Pike does the little training exercise where they tell the cadet that, like, her husband has been killed and, you know, now that he needs to, you know, all that stuff, the Kobayashi Maru kind of thing. I thought it was pretty bad, but people love it. But screw that. She also wrote Terra Firma Part 2 in season three. What are we in? Season three of Discovery?
Yeah.
Which was the last episode with Georgiou. And I think that was the best episode of last season. So I know, Lance, you said you're not caught up on Discovery yet, right?
No.
Well, Brandon, I mean, you've seen both of these episodes. I mean, since that's
I've
all
seen
we
that
have.
Short Trek, and I'm just like,
ah. Okay, all right. So you have seen that Short Trek. Okay. Well, what do you think, Brandon?
I think the Short Trek is fine. I mean, it's not terrible. It's not offensive or anything like that. It's fine. I mean, I don't think it's the best Short Trek or even close to the best Short Trek. Terra Firma right. 1 and 2 were great episodes. I think Terra Firma Part 1 was better than Terra Firma Part 2. But I'm intrigued. I mean, I want a Star Trek movie, but I'm very doubtful that this is going to happen right now. But obviously, I hope it happens because I love Star Trek, and I hope it's the best Star Trek movie ever made. I think that if they were to do what they should do, this should tie into some of the series that are out right now, right? So maybe like a Strange New Worlds movie or a Discovery movie or something like that. I think they should be doing what Marvel's doing and tying in the movies into the television. But what I think is probably the smart choice is that they should probably do like a reboot Kelvin Timeline Next Generation movie. I think that would probably be the smart choice. But, you know, I don't know. I'm waiting to see what happens. I mean, if it happens, great. I'm just doubtful that it will.
I mean, you know, these things, I mean, there's always like scripts which, you know, are written that don't get produced for whatever reason. I mean, just recently someone unearthed a script for The Rise of Khan, which was written after Wrath of Khan but before Search for Spock, you know, that never
what?
Got made. Hmm. Yeah.
Hashtag it. Release it.
Yeah, but, you know, I feel like there's no reason to think that it won't happen. I know that, you know, Trekkies have been burned repeatedly right now, but there was a reason for each of those things, you know? And now we're somewhere else. And mm-hmm. I think that they're taking all that stuff that they learned before, and, you know, this isn't going to have two Chrises in it. It's not going to be directed by Tarantino. And hopefully the people in charge now will be in charge for years to come. But
yeah.
So who knows? I mean, it's possible that she turns it in and they're like, this isn't what we're looking for, and they move on, but there's no reason to think that it won't happen. You know what I mean? I don't know if that makes any sense. There is no reason to think that the other one, well, there is reason to think that the Tarantino one wouldn't happen. Yep. But
sure is.
As big a proponent as I was for championing that film, I never actually expected it to happen, but I would love to see a Tarantino Star Trek film.
Yes. So I'm excited about this. I mean, I keep on thinking about this, and something that they brought up, you know, Kalinda Vasquez, she's named after mm-hmm. a character from the original series. Can you imagine being her parents and being like, we are such big nerds that we're going to name our daughter after this random character from this random episode of the original series. And then, you know, whatever it is, 40 years later or whatever, she's like, oh, hey, I'm writing the new Star Trek movie. Come on. It's crazy. This is crazy. She's also, she was just in the news a couple weeks ago because she's developing a new show based on a George R.R. Martin property. And she is also the writer on America Chavez, the comic book for Marvel, mm-hmm. which I haven't read. But yeah.
Okay.
It's cool. So we shall see. We shall see. All right. Well, it's still awards season, so as we do, let's finish up this episode with some awards chatter. Specifically, the Golden Globes were last week. Did you guys watch the Golden Globes?
I did not.
Neither did I. I haven't been much for awards ceremonies since back when Julia Roberts won the award for Best Actress. So.
Oh, that was pretty. That was pretty good. I mean, that was a pretty good award ceremony. That was the award ceremony where Steven Soderbergh won Best Director.
I mean, I'm still upset that Ellen Burstyn lost the award. You know, like Ellen Burstyn was amazing in that film. That's like definitely the best performance of the year. And that's you know, ageism in Hollywood, I think, is the reason that she lost. I mean, not that Julia Roberts did bad, but Ellen Burstyn did better.
She was pretty great. She was pretty great. But you know. I think there's always going to be things. I mean, that year Gladiator won instead of Traffic. That's crazy. But I think that award shows in general are still fun to watch. I don't know. I enjoy them. I know a lot of people are just like screw this. And especially this year. I mean, it was a little rough. You know, understandably so. But still, it wasn't exactly, you know, mind blowing entertainment. But you know, they did give out some awards. Best Motion Picture Musical or Comedy went to...
Yeah, I have a huge problem with this because there is no way on God's green earth that Borat's subsequent movie film is a better production, a better anything than Hamilton. I'm sorry. It's just not.
I thought for sure that Hamilton was going to win this.
That is utter BS.
I haven't seen Hamilton, and I would agree with that statement.
I haven't seen it either. I have seen Palm Springs, and I know that that's better than Borat, but, you know, whatever.
It's like, which is one of the reasons why I have a love-hate relationship with these award shows, because in my estimation, too many times they get things wrong, and they're exclusionary and discriminatory against things, and, like, they don't see everything, they don't take everything into account. And so it's like, not only did Borat subsequent movie film beat Hamilton once, it beat it twice, like, because Sacha Baron Cohen got the award for best performer in a comedy or musical over Lin-Manuel Miranda. It's like, are you kidding me? Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Well, we won't have to worry about that happening at the Oscars because Hamilton is not eligible for the Oscars,
which is also a bunch of bull.
It's a weird distinction, which I don't quite understand. That, you know, the idea that, like, filmed stage plays don't qualify. I don't get it. Like, well, where do you draw the line? You know,
They draw that line for lots of things because, like, you know, it's purposefully exclusionary to so many things, and I think it's wrong. Like, you know, Soul rightfully so won best score, and it rightfully so won best animated feature, but yeah. Soul is every bit as deserving of a best picture nod than as the other films that were there, right? It is every bit as much, you know, cinema, quote unquote, as Marty likes to say, as the others, and it should be counted as such, and it should compete with those other ones. The fact that it's animated should not exclude it from that category.
Yeah, the Golden Globes are all, you know, wonky like that because they want to have like as many winners as they can, so they do the comedy category, the drama category, the foreign language category, and then the animated one. Yeah. You know, and you can only be in one of those four categories, whereas like with the Oscars, you could be in, well, they don't have musical versus, you know, but you have best picture. Like if you had an animated foreign language film, it could be nominated in all three, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And that was, you know, a big controversy this year because Minari was in the foreign language film category, even though it's an American movie.
Yeah.
So, and it won, of course. Best drama went to Nomadland, and then best animated went to Soul. So those were the winners there. And then as far as the acting categories, Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah won supporting actor. Jodie Foster won supporting actress for The Mauritanian, which I think was a surprise to everyone. And then for the lead actor in a drama, it was Chadwick Boseman for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Lead actor in a comedy was Sacha Baron Cohen for Borat.
Garbage.
And then actress in a drama was Andra Day for The United States versus Billie Holiday, which was a surprise to everyone for sure. And actress in a comedy was Rosamund Pike for I Care a Lot, which I think was also a bit of a surprise. So... Oh, and then Best Director went to Chloe Zhao for Nomadland. So it seems like Nomadland is now the front runner. You know, one of the things about the Golden Globes is that they're not voted on by anyone who votes on the Oscars. So
there you go.
There you go.
Oh, I did notice on the TV side of things, there was no Bridgerton, which I think is a mistake. The Mandalorian was there once, which I thought was odd. And then it made me start thinking about, you know, the next year's award season. And it got me thinking about, like, you know, WandaVision, like tying it all back to the beginning. And, you know, Catherine Hahn and Elizabeth Olsen, in my estimation, deserve recognition for the work that they did on that show, but they're not going to get it. And because, again, purposefully exclusionary, they look like, you know, people, you know, in the industry look down upon these subject matters as if they are less than, or as if, you know, people that are doing them do not work hard or put time and energy and put craft into it. And I think that that's wrong. If they watch that, they would see that good performances happen not only in the stuff you would think that it is and the stuff that we're conditioned to think is good, like it's in everything, and they need to broaden their scope, and they need to look at everything, because if they did, they probably find that there's good quality in everything and not just the stuff that we've been conditioned to look at.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think there was a big, I don't know, I think there's a big overlook that's happened on TV myself, and I mean, probably my favorite TV show on right now is Better Call Saul, and I think Rhea Seehorn not getting nominated is a crime. Like, she's absolutely fantastic in that show, and Bob Odenkirk, like, rightfully keeps getting acknowledged, but I mean, they keep looking over Rhea Seehorn. Like, she is just amazing in that show.
They had this amazing moment during the broadcast where, like, it was all done over Zoom, so what they would do is, like, they'd be like, and coming up, best actor in a drama, and then you'd cut to like the Zoom screen and you'd see like the five nominees, and they'd be like just chatting with each other. And when they did that for, like, you know, Bob Odenkirk's category, he's like, hey, guys, how's it going? And everyone else is like, fine. And he's like, so, Joe, what have you been up to? And like, he's like trying to get them to like banter, you know, and like nobody else was cooperating. And he's like, I don't know what you want me to do here, guys. I'm doing my best trying to get everyone else to talk and no one's talking. But yeah. Oh, well. And then he lost. So. But anyway. All right. So that was the Golden Globes. All right. Well, Brandon, thank you for joining us this week. You're welcome back anytime to talk about anything, even if it's not Marvel. If you want to come in and talk about something else, that's cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciated coming on and talking a bit about this. It was a lot of fun to just be able to talk a little bit about WandaVision. I don't have a lot of time to podcast at this time because I just switched positions at my work. But I was actually able to make this work, so I'm very grateful to be here. Thanks, guys, so much. I appreciate it. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. Here on the Nerd Party Network, we're finishing up our run on House Lights. We're finishing up our series on Christopher Nolan. And then you can go back and talk about, take a listen to our series on David Fincher, but I won't be around for our next one. I just don't have the time to record right now. But you can also find me on my own network with two shows. The United Federation of Podcast Network has Franchise Fatigue, which is all about movies, remakes, and sequels. And I have a show called Infinite Diversity, which is all about New Trek. And then I also have my long-running monthly show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, where I go over Hitch's films in chronological order.
Cool. And Lance, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Sir Lance Laster on all of my social medias. And you can find me also on the United Federation of Podcasts talking about all the things that make Arrow, Arrow on Always Hold On to Arrow. You can find us on Twitter at Do Not Fail Our Pod.
And you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Mumbles3K. You can also find me on my website, filmdamagepod.com, doing a show called Film Damage, where we talk about time travel, Star Trek, and film projection. We just did an episode on the time travel in Tenet. And,
I'm halfway done that one.
Yeah, it's like, does the time travel make any sense? Does the movie, is everyone confused by the movie because the time travel doesn't make any sense?
I mean, it is a Chris Nolan movie, so...
Yeah, but usually his stuff does make sense, right?
Somewhat. He cannot tell a story in chronological order.
That's very true. I mentioned that quite a few times on our podcast. Yes,
this is definitely true. Yeah, but yeah, you can find that over on filmdamagepod.com. You can also find me on talkfilmsociety.com, doing a show called Trek Film Society, where we take a look at the Star Trek movies with a more critical eye. We're just finishing that one up. And that's about it. So, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. And we will be back next week with some, I'm sure, shocking news, which none of us could have possibly predicted.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.